Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popek. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people from all walks of life to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week's guest is Matt Saverick, a mental performance coach who's been an integral part of Headspace and Talkspace, and is the founder of Saverick Enterprises, where he provides executive coaching. Matt's got expert advice on improving your confidence, mindfulness, and performance, which will help you professionally, personally, and even athletically. Next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popek. Now, here's Moshe.
Hi, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Moshe, thank you for having me. Good to see you.
So let's start with Saverick Enterprises. What are some of the executive coaching techniques that you offer?
Yeah, first off, thank you for having me. I'm here because I deeply respect what you're doing for this world. And thank you to your audience. If folks are here listening to this, that's the hardest part, showing up. So you've kind of completed the hardest step.
Thank you.
To me, it's about realizing that the fundamentals of your mind are that your brain, your mind is the basis of everything you experience in life and every contribution you can make to this world. Given that fact, it makes sense to train it. So this notion of having an untrained mind, we all know what that's like. We're kind of fumbling and bumbling around our lives. But this is what allows us to be less than happy or less than fulfilled, even when things are as good as they can be. Even when everything is copacetic, we spend almost all of our life consumed by stress, thinking about what we should do, what we need to do, or what we wish we had done. Yeah. So mindfulness is about finding contentment in the present moment with what you got.
You know, it's interesting. I heard a lecture and he was telling me that, to your point, 90% of what we think about, it's thinking about the past. And then almost the other 10% is worrying about the future. So basically, I think of mindfulness, and it's that intentional work to be present, to observe, to use our mind to observe our thoughts. And what would you say is some of the obstacles, the common obstacles to really being mindful? And I know, like you said, it's a buzzword nowadays.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right question there. Just to build on what you shared, if we fail to connect with the present moment, that means we fail to connect with the people around us, even the people that we love the most, right? And most importantly, connect with ourselves. So I think that's the largest gap. People are racing to the next mile marker. People are trying to cross things off their list. People are vacillating in the, gosh, I shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? To your point. So I think what you'll see is that there's theory and then there's practice. Theory is like the reverence for the work that people have done previously for millennia before us, right? There's so much wisdom in books and teachings and elders. And then there's practice. You know, the best way to become a chef is probably read some books, but you got to get in the kitchen and cut it up. So some of the biggest obstacles to mindfulness are that notion of reverence for theory and then actually jumping in the crucible to do the practice, number one. Number two, understanding where you are. Like even in this conversation right now, there are moments where you're the teacher and I'm the student. Here I am listening, thinking, processing. And then I have the opportunity to jump up to the proverbial chalkboard and write down my thoughts, right? And you kind of listen and learn and observe and kind of take that. So I think a lot of individuals, and we'll get into social media, but a lot of individuals believe that it's just about grabbing the megaphone and like spraying it out there in the town square, as opposed to sitting back in your cocoon, observing, listening, thinking.
And I think, I'm just thinking from the side of, you know, business managers, how can we give kind of like, talk about the toolkit. What can we give business managers? A couple of pointers to create a more healthy work environment.
So first of all, you're assuming inherent in that question that managers are set up to manage.
Right.
I take kind of a step before that, which is just because you're a manager, you should check yourself and say like, hey, have I actually gone through manager 101 training? Meaning, do I know how to listen? Do I understand how to communicate? Do I understand that people communicate differently? Do I understand how to run meeting norms and values and listen and learn from the individuals on my team, right? What type of leader am I? Am I armed up to actually like help individuals grow in their careers? So I think assuming that people are great managers and they have their own kind of skill set, right? And springboard. Let's see. So we're indexing on a healthy and productive work environment. That's really the ultimate goal, right? So people can flourish, and managers have to lead by example. So they need to show that they're human. They need to introduce their family. They need to talk about some boundaries, right? Managers are not superhuman, they're people. And your team, those are people as well. So I'm a huge fan, especially in this COVID container, of communicating more often, finding the different pathways to connect with individuals. And now I'm about to say a bunch of basic stuff, which, you know, I think this is the fundamentals of being a human, but remember somebody's name and their family names and their birthday. Remember important dates that they might build their life around, right? I mean, look, you're a father. If I call you on your son or daughter's birthday, that shows that I'm taking the care to think about you, right? I've taken the time out of my day. I just haven't put HBD on your Facebook wall. I actually picked up the phone and call you, kind of a lost start. So I think that those fundamentals of being a human, and then talking about mental health. This is the one big lesson that I learned. We're assuming that people know how to talk about mental health. We simply do not have the vernacular or the common language to talk about thoughts and feelings in a professional setting. It doesn't feel like a natural place to talk about, hey, I feel this way or I think this way, because generally we're there to solve problems, not necessarily create an open forum for discussion.
Well, so I appreciate that. I want to jump now to athletics, right? We're seeing recently in the news Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka, right? The highest in their sports, highest level performance, and then dealing with openly, right, the mental health challenges. Do you think nowadays there's more pressure on athletes?
It has to be. I mean, I'm not using data. I'm kind of just pulling this from my gut, but it's nearly impossible to focus on just the objective at hand, right? There is so much pomp and circumstance. Assuming like, let's say you completely bail from social media, assuming that's like neutralized, but there's just so much more that an athlete has to do aside from just getting out there and hitting the ball, right? Or just getting out there and landing a routine. There's so much more. So I think the volume, as you and I both know, being humans on this planet, the volume is turned up so high. And unless you train to figure out where that knob is to turn it down, it's nearly impossible for people to focus. Certainly for us lay people, imagine if millions, if not billions of eyeballs are on you, literally and figuratively. The pressure is immense.
Yeah, and I think about, you mentioned the volume being turned up. I think of social media, technology in general, all humans, and then competing at the highest levels, right? Competing at the highest levels would just amp that up. And I know you've done work with some of these athletes. What are the areas? I guess you're working on their thoughts, right? And kind of how they move. Like, what are some of the areas that you really focus on to when game day comes, they're able to really show up?
When we talk about game day, you know, it's important to understand the game, meaning inherent in the nature of game, it's us versus them. You have to have a killer instinct to want to win. You have to have a love, respect, and reverence for the person that you're playing against. You have to have a respect and deep honor for the game at hand, right? The Olympics are such a beautiful expression of this, right? Where we've been doing this for some time. And you understand that there's a lineage and you're representing your country. You are representing folks who have come before. So I think that notion of respect and then just committing to the basics.
You know, it's interesting. I love that you said the basics, because every single person, the highest achieving people, it's kind of that repetition of those fundamentals. Maybe a tennis player, basketball player, soccer player. Everything seems to be that repetition, that it's muscle memory, but plus the positive self-talk, right? So if you don't sleep well, or you don't drink enough water, to your point, you don't have the ability, of your less ability, to continue that positive self-talk to yourself. What advice would you say, would you give to parents who have children that want to get into professional sports, kind of that balance, it seems? What would you say for them?
Yeah, I love what you said. I mean, repetitions is the key to becoming great, right? We all know Malcolm Gladwell's work where he talks about 10,000 hours plus or minus, right? That's all about just reps. So just coming back to the previous thought about techniques and dealing with pressure, I just want to draw out one thing. What does almost every athlete say after they've either pitched a perfect game or played their best? Almost every athlete says the same thing. I was having fun.
Right.
I just was having fun out there, right? Like, because the pressure dissolves. So back to your question around, like, what type of behaviors can we instill in our children? Never underestimate the power of silence. You think just because you're a parent, the teacher archetype, you have to share stuff. You don't. Just be there. And I'm going to make some sweeping generalizations here, but I think it's important to just say. So I believe that you're taking this way more seriously than your kids are. Let them be kids, right? This notion of, like, you don't need to tell them that this is a big deal, or you don't need to tell them that they need to take practice seriously. They know. They need love. They don't need another coach. They need a best friend. So be their best friend in this setting, you know, specific to, they have coaches, assuming that they do, and you're not the softball coach, right? They need unconditional love without condition. You can kick and scream and push and curse. I am your father. You cannot get away from me. I love you. There's nothing you can do. I am here. So they just know that that is that kind of steady drumbeat of love and compassion that smothers them, and they can't get away, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I love that you say that, by the way. The unconditional love idea is it is correct. It's correct across the boards, means exactly that unconditioned, no matter what they do. I know also, by the way, that, and this is super cool that you're involved in Headspace and Talkspace. What got you involved with that originally? How did you start to get involved with that?
I'm pretty open in sharing some of the events that have shaped my life, right? Just juxtaposing this to the first point of awareness, we need to figure out our own story, the real story that has shaped us. And I think about these inflection points and then the decisions we make thereafter. So I'll tell you, maybe four events or four decisions that helped me shape my life to choose to go work at a mindfulness company back in 2016 when mindfulness wasn't really a thing, or it wasn't a big thing like it is now, right?
Yes.
So number one, I would say I had a science teacher, Miss Leeds. Shout out, Miss Leeds. Go Spanish River Sharks if you're watching.
Sure.
I'll come visit you in the coming weeks. Yeah. But she was in love with science. The love that she had and the respect that she had, the curiosity, the sense of awe around the discipline made me love it. And I kind of caught the bug early. I'll never forget this moment where she was known as a harder teacher, and individuals would, like, shy away from her class. But I was kind of bitten early in my time with her, I was sitting up front in class, just taking notes, loving it. I just really gravitated to her style. But she's like, you know, you can change your mind just like you can change your body. And she kept saying that over and over and over again. And I felt like, is it the same as like doing bicep curls and your bicep gets stronger? And I thought, it is, right? Whether it's silence or stillness or work or practice or whatever it is, homework, shooting free throws, connecting with your loved ones, right? I mean, you're paving these neural pathways. So that was kind of an inflection point where I realized like, wow, neuroscience, it was the first time I heard neuroscience. So from them, I went on to go study integrative biology in school and neuroscience. Another inflection point is, this is more not necessarily about me, but to my family, I lost my older brother, Josh, to suicide.
I'm sorry.
Rest in peace, Josh. And he was a star tennis player. But struggled, you know, like really, really struggled. And if you can imagine 20 plus years ago, there weren't that many resources for him to find community, for him to find solace. So that I made a decision that I will commit my life to my own personal development, supporting my family, my three sisters. And then after losing my father right before my wedding, I decided to cross over from this like professional life into personal life, where I went from working at a publicly traded company, running some great sales teams, being successful from outside optics, but feeling hollow inside. And Headspace was a tool that helped me. I had an opportunity to work in Headspace, what we called Headspace for Work. So Headspace is widely known as kind of a B2C business selling to consumers. I helped build out what's known as their B2B business, Headspace for Work. So selling to the enterprise, Google, Facebook, Tesla, Amazon, Walmart would purchase Headspace and educate their individuals, their employees about mindfulness and neuroscience. So that got me to Headspace and then Talkspace, which has nothing to do with Headspace, kind of in the same proverbial space, but a different business altogether. Talkspace is telebehavioral health, delivering therapy and psychiatry through a HIPAA compliant app and web experience. So those are two tools that helped me along my journey to overcome some of the trauma that I had with my brother Josh and my dad Marty.
Yeah, and I relate to that very much. I think my whole journey, everything I'm doing on social media, the positivity newsletter, this podcast, everything is a reflection towards healing. So everybody finds that. And the more you can give to society from your personal journey, the more I think inch by inch the world will be a better place and we can empower more and more people. So Matt, how can... if people want to be more mindful or find out more about you, how would people go about doing that?
Yeah, thank you. I'd say probably LinkedIn through the professional lens. And then if people just want to start a conversation, I'd say I'm happy to give out my email address. It's just coach@MatthewSavrick.com. So those are probably the two best ways, LinkedIn. Just search my name and then that email address. But about being more mindful, I would say call your mom, call your kids, and ask them some questions, right? Just really be there and put on your student hat and learn from these individuals, because they're, as we all know, right, time is short here. So just connect with those people, tighten up, be the one to take that step.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.